Hi, this is Judge Marginis. Good afternoon.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Judge
Thank
Conklin?
You, Judge. We're just starting roll. Go ahead, Brandy.
Sure. Judge Conklin?
I'm here.
Ms. Fleming?
I'm here.
Judge Barton?
He's out of town.
Judge Blum?
Here.
Judge Buckley? Judge Buckley? Judge Cope?
Here.
Judge Fannin?
Here.
Judge Gabe?
Here.
Judge Jackson?
Here.
Judge Marginis?
Here.
Judge Nadler? Judge McCabe?
Here.
Judge Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Carter? Here. Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Harrigan?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
Present.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Ms. Turner?
Here.
Ms. Uger and Capobianco? Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
And advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
Yes, I'm here.
And Mr. Theodorovich?
Here.
Thank you.
So we just completed roll. As we were doing that, I heard a couple dings. Did either Judge Buckley or Judge Nadler or Tanya call in?
Judge Buckley did.
Great. Thanks so much. And Judge Nadler did let me know that he's got a court exec meeting, so he's going to try to bounce back and forth on these. Okay, welcome all. Thank you very much. Appreciate how busy you are and how much time this takes. And so for that reason, we'll get right to it. The first thing I'm going to ask is, assuming you've all read the minutes because you're all diligent, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the May 2nd meeting.
This is Kim Turner. I move approval.
And this is Judge Jackson. I second it.
Moved and seconded. Is there any kickback member who's opposed to the motion to move and approve the May 2nd kickback meeting? Hearing none, I'll deem the minutes of the May 2nd meeting approved. Next, we're turning to public comment. Since this is a telephonic meeting, by rule, there is no in-person public comment, but written public comment is allowed, and with every open meeting, we did receive written public comment in the form of a letter. Want to make sure you all have that. And I believe, Brandy, that was the only written public comment we had, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So that the public comment portion of the meeting is concluded. But again, I want to emphasize that the letter was submitted to all of you in the materials. So moving right to the first, and these are both action items, to the first action item on our agenda, as noted in the materials. That's consideration of the recommendation of RNE regarding the allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund, TCTF, proposed in the governor's budget. That's the proposed budget, including cannabis convictions and in the May revise addressing the 25 additional judgeships. And with that, I believe, Melissa, are you present and ready to present?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. And we'll turn to you. And before we do that, I just want to acknowledge the co-chairs on this. Sherry and Judge Barton, do you have any concerns or anything else you'd like to add? Hearing none. Melissa, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Judge. Melissa Ng with the Judicial Council Budget Services. I'm presenting on Agenda Item 1, which is the 2019-20 additional trial court allocations. As outlined in the report on page 7, additional items from the TCTF is recommended by the R&E subcommittee for consideration by the TICFAC, including $24.486 million for the support of new judgeships, $10.852 million for the court interpreters program, $13.9 million for cannabis conviction resentencing workload, and additional available federal funds reimbursement of $33.955 million for court-appointed dependency counsel included in the governor's May revise. The recommendation also includes $75 million general fund for the pre-trial pilot project proposed in the governor's budget and technical adjustments totaling $2.139 million related to revised benefit cost change for non-interpreter employees adjustment for SJO conversions and a one-time adjustment for the replenishment of the $10 million reserve. Just to provide some detail on the recommendations, the total funding provided for unfunded judgeships was $30.4 million to fund 25 of the remaining 48 judgeships authorized by AB 159. Of the $30.4 million, $4.6 million for compensation of Superior Court judges is excluded from this recommendation, since judges are either paid directly through the Judicial Council or paid by the county and reimbursed through the State Controller's Office. $1.3 million is carved out for court interpreters, and the remaining $24.486 million of the $30.4 million is for general trial court operations and is recommended to be allocated based on current workload formula policy, which will be discussed in detail in the next agenda item, but is reflected in Attachment 1B, columns Q, R, and W. Other May revised adjustments include an additional $9.564 million for the expansion of interpreter services in civil matters and to address increased costs in criminal cases, for a total of $10.852 million, including the $1.3 million from funding included for the support of judgeship, as previously stated. This would bring the total funding to $120.685 million for 2019-20 for the court interpreters program. The governor's budget also included $13.9 million to support increased workload for the trial courts as a result of the enactment of the Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act. The methodology for the allocation of these funds will be considered by the Funding Methodology Subcommittee at its June 17, 2019 meeting. For court-appointed dependency counsel, the governor's budget included $20 million ongoing, increasing the total amount of funding available to $156.7 million. This amount was approved by TICFAC at its May 2nd meeting. Additional federal reimbursements of $33.955 million has become available for 2019-20 reimbursement due to a recent federal policy change, which brings the total up to $190.7 million available for this program. Lastly, other technical adjustments to the allocation include $1.7 million for the full year cost adjustment related to SJO conversions in 2018-19, a reduction of $117,124 from all course base allocation for the replenishment of the $10 million reserve distribution in 2018-19, and lastly, a reduction of $286,765. And this was just to correct a misreported amount in the benefits cost change previously approved by TICFAC at its May 2nd meeting. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, and just a couple things. One, Tanya has joined us. Tanya, thank you so much. So we'll show, I believe, we're in practically full attendance. And just to clarify, Melissa, this is all going to the council. If these recommendations are approved, go to the council for their July meeting, correct?
Yes.
All right.
On these allocations being included in the Budget Act.
And that's exactly, thank you for clarifying that. So we're doing our best. We sort of have to work both optimistically and frankly with appreciation to the money, but we have to do our best to make these decisions before they're final, given the timing of the council meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, or else we'll end up having a delay in distribution.
Right, because if we don't get it to the council in July, then they can't necessarily act on the allocation of this money till September, which puts courts a little bit behind the eight ball. But I've said enough. Let me open it up to questions or concerns about item number one and the recommendations, the six of them that are set forth on page 7 of your material.
Judge Conklin, this is John Wardlaw. Just for individuals from the legislative branch or the executive branch that may be listening in on this conversation, I just want to make it absolutely clear that that any action taken today is not meant to preempt the legislature's authority in resolving the ultimate budget act with the executive branch. That this is really just for our planning, so that should the legislature ultimately, with the governor, come out with a budget that is similar to what was proposed within the governor's budget that's being contemplated now with the legislature, that we're well prepared for the Judicial Council in July to take an action once the Budget Act is already fully established and out.
Excellent. So we're doing our best to be prepared for what we hope happens.
Yes.
So thanks, Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Judge Conklin, this is Kim Turner. I have a couple of questions about this
wonderful news about an additional nearly $34 million in Title IV e-funds for court-appointed counsel. So I was not aware that this was in the wind, so this is incredibly good news. However, I do want to better understand sort of what the process is going forward. In the report that you provided, it says that CFCC will allocate the funds to committees as required, take the allocation of funds to the committee. So is this something that's going to be spun off to a CFCC advisory committee or a subgroup, or do we know how this is all going to work? I understand, do a little digging today, and I understand that there's like $1.5 million has already been set aside for the Judicial Council to hire some new analysts to deal with the reporting and data requirements that will go along with the Title IV e-funding. And I'm just wondering, first of all, if we know what the data reporting is going to be, if it's going to be onerous or if it's going to be something that's already captured in the JCAT system, and also how the allocation decisions will be made, if we're going to use the methodology that already exists or if this is an opportunity to sort of work that methodology a little bit differently depending on, you know, how the funding comes in. So those are just some of my questions. I could probably come up with 20 more, but I just thought I would start there, and I wonder if anyone is on the phone that can speak to what the process is, the next steps going forward.
Melissa?
I've checked to see if Don Will is on the line. This is Lotko. If I may, just a high level of my understanding is the additional money that we're talking about here is federal funds. There was a bulletin issued in December that allowed our state general fund to be used as a match towards some federal funds. And so this is the first estimate for the 19-20 fiscal year. And we hope that once we get our whole administrative process and our claiming process down, that we can even increase the federal drawdown. But I think that there's some unique circumstances as it relates to the 33.9 in some sense of what the areas could actually take advantage of this funding. But so the reference is that CFCC will be looking as to how this additional federal funds would be allocated to ensure that we are using now these federal funds consistent with the rules and regulations that the federal government has for this, and working obviously with our state partner on this. So there will be more to come, but what we're doing here is having this acknowledged as an allocation from the TCTF, but the specific allocations by court will come as work is done by CFCC and their staff, similar to the cannabis conviction funding. We need to have it identified and allocated sort of at a high level, and then knowing that the work to actually come up with a court-by-court allocation will be coming behind that, but at least we have that approved by the council for it to move and be reflected in our overall authorities to allocate funds from the TCTF.
So, Kim, this is Sherry Carter. To more directly answer your question, the answer is I don't believe there's any plan to change the allocation methodology. As Lotko indicated, this is really a high-level authorization to just recognize the money and to identify the fact that is Families, Children, and Courts program will start working on that. If there's concerns or ideas on how to change that allocation formula, I think that it would have to be identified in a work plan, and a group would have to get together, there is no intent that I'm aware of to change anything that's already been approved by the Judicial Council at this point.
No, you're correct, Sherry. Thank you for that.
Okay, thanks, Sherry and Zlatko. That's helpful. So do we have any sense? I realize that this money will be allocated or distributed to the state on the federal fiscal year, right? So starting in October of 2019, is that...
There was the drawdown, I believe, was actually authorized to even occur as soon as the bulletin was issued in December. So this is our state federal. This is our state year's estimate for this first year. But again, we're the recipient through the Department of Social Services, and so they're the ones doing the draw, and we're the ones receiving the funds from the state administering agency. So this is the state fiscal year's estimate.
Okay, great.
To go up as we improve and refine our claiming process.
So, Zlatko, are you saying that this is not a ceiling, this $34 million, that there could be more money available?
Correct. But it is a conservative estimate to not over and not sort of over balloon the program in a year in which we really can't make that full drawdown. So it's a conservative estimate of what is reasonably able to be drawn down with the entities that are out there who have the systems to report on what is necessary to make the claim.
Okay.
So, yeah, more to come.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That's helpful.
Sure.
Great. Thanks so much for that. Any other questions here on the six recommendations on page 7?
Not a question, but maybe it is a comment, a question. This is Mark Cope. Would there be any downside to including language to address what Mr. Wardlaw said? So include language such as subject to any restrictions to be placed by the legislature. This is our recommendation. Would there be a downside to that?
This is locked up.
Carter. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go, Sherry, for sure.
I would not want that kind of a language in any of our recommendations, because I think the Judicial Council would make whatever changes are necessary if something does occur with the legislature, and I don't think our committee should make those sorts of changes because I think that the branch should be managing its own allocations, and if something changes, I think the Judicial Council should do it.
Yeah, and this is John Wardlaw. With respect to that, I think as a branch, we all recognize the authority of the legislature to pass the law as they see fit, and so that would apply to really anything that they're contemplating at this point. So I don't think we necessarily need to add language at this point because we do understand the legislature has ultimately the authority.
No, well, I know
agree.
We do.
I agree with John. Oh, sorry, Judge Cope.
No, go ahead, Zlatko.
It's always gone without saying that any time it goes with saying, we've always said it, that these are preliminary in anticipation of a budget that will be enacted that includes these. So anything that's ever been done in the years that I've been here that was in advance of the budget actually being passed was always subject to that final budget being, having these funds. And we were always prepared to revise and adjust the final recommendations. But as this, I think Judge Conklin started at the beginning, this is an effort to give you the best planning opportunity you have heading into the budget, as opposed to funding that used to come in October, November, and December when budgets were late, hoping that you have the best opportunity. And always, all you CEOs know, you're always nimble and ready to adjust based on what comes in the final budget.
Judge Cope, did that address your concern?
Well, yeah, I think I probably have a slightly different opinion because of this is a unique circumstance, but I'm fine with what's going on.
All right, thanks. So any other concerns, comments about items 1, recommendations 1 through 6 on page 7?
Judge Conklin, this is Rebecca. I'm not sure if Leah's on the call, but I have a question for her on the workload formula allocation.
That's item 2. You mean item 2?
Is that number 2? I'm sorry.
Yep.
I was thinking
okay.
It was rolled into number 1. Never mind. I will hold my question.
Thanks, but I'll look forward to it. So if there aren't any other, and I don't mean to stifle conversation, but if there aren't any other questions or concerns, I'd invite a motion.
Judge Conklin, this is Judge Blum. I move we approve the 6 recommendations.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Yamasaki.
All right, moved by Judge Blum, seconded by David Yamasaki to approve the recommendations and support on page 7. So now there's a pending motion moved and approved, and I'll open it up again for any comments or questions about the pending motion. All right. I've waited. I've paused. I've heard none. Is there any member who is opposed to the motion to adopt the 6 recommendations set forth on page 7 of the materials? Or any member that wishes to abstain from the vote? Hearing no objections or abstentions, I will deem the 6 recommendations unanimously approved. Thanks all very much, Melissa especially, and everybody else for their work on that. And we say it all the time, but we need to say it all the time. This thanks filters up, obviously, to those on staff headed by Martin and the chief that have got here. So thank you. So now, Rebecca, let's move to item 2.
Hello?
Yep. Was that Rebecca? Oh. Okay. So now we're moving to item 2 for your consideration, folks, as set forth in the materials. That report begins at page 15. Leah's going to present on that, so let me just sort of focus us here a little bit. This is, again, looking forward to funding that we are optimistically hoping relating to the workload allocation funding methodology that was previously approved. So it was then known as WAFM. It's now the workload formula. And reminding everybody, just as a background, 4 steps to this. Step 1, bring all Cluster 1 cohorts up to at least 100%. Once that's accomplished, then we look to the first 50% for those cohorts that are under the statewide funding average funding ratio. Again, this is a policy discussion. Then step 3 is, after we take care of that as a policy, we allocate the remaining funding to all cohorts via funding methodology. And then as an overall governor on this, so to speak, no cohort allocation is to exceed 100% of its need unless it's a result of a funding floor calculation. So you have materials in front of you. Leah's going to walk us through these, but I would ask us to remember, and I'm going to actually ask for thoughts too about this is a policy discussion, not a numbers driven discussion. So I know you only have before you one thing from staff, and they're being very careful to allow us to talk about thoughts related to policy as to how these go out, rather than all of us looking at numbers and saying, oh, what about this, what about that? So with that, Leah, could you sort of summarize for us the recommendations set forth in the materials and the attachments?
Sure, absolutely. I think the one thing I should start with is just a recognition that the committee has asked that staff update the model every year, adjusting for workload changes. And so the first step that we take is to compute the workload allocation that's required in the court based on the RAS model. This year, we have a new work year value that was approved by the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, which affects all courts. We've also, FMS has previously made an update to the model to include local revenue, and that affects some but not all courts. It's only the courts that collect that funding. So, you know, when we start off, the spreadsheets that are included in the model, the far left side shows the basic workload formula compared to the base or starting allocation. And then we compute percentages showing the distance that each court is called percent of need. And it's really in looking at that column that we then apply the various adjustments that you enumerated, Judge. There's actually one that comes right before that you will see right kind of in the middle of page 17, and that is a computation for non-sheriff security applies to a few courts, and we have noted that column as preliminary on the top. The computation is a little tricky, and we want to take a little bit of extra time to verify that that's been made correctly. So, again, we're looking at this in concept right now, but just recognize that we might see some adjustments. Really, the main thing I want to point out is that the size of the allocation to be distributed, the $24 million, is not sufficient to meet the gap between the workload formula's funding need and the allocation. And so we've applied the policy as best we can based on our interpretation of what should happen. So what we see on page 17 on the far right is the first step adjustment to bring all courts all Cluster 1 courts to 100%. And the sum total of that is just a little bit over $1 million. Moving on to the next page, page 18, the next step in the formula is to take 50% of the remaining funding, which is an amount just a little bit over $11 million, and distribute it or allocate it to the courts that are below the statewide average funding level. This part of the formula is the only part of the workload formula that addresses equity. And so the allocation that we are showing is one interpretation of what that might mean. We're taking the dollars that are to be allocated, the $11.4 million, and directing it at the courts that are farthest away from the statewide average funding level. And it's a combination of the size of the courts that are below that statewide average and the dollars needed to reach the statewide average that results in the allocation that you see here. There are, I think it's 21 courts that fall below the statewide average of 81.4. But to apply this methodology, because of the dollars to be allocated, only 6 courts receive any portion of the funding at this part in the formula. Final step is to apply the remaining $11.4 million to all courts that are below 100% of funding. And you can see that allocation in about the middle of the spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And then on the far right side, there are some totals showing how much new funding each court receives and the total allocation and the final resulting percentages. So that, are there any questions at this point about the walkthrough?
So when you talk about that, Leah, the step one, the security, and two, those few courts that are, those courts are bringing up to 100% of need, which is adopted in the formula, and step four, everybody gets the second 50%. What we're really focusing on here is the 11.4, that's the middle 50%, right? That's the part that's supposed to go, that is, and I think our discussion will be, what does it mean to be an underfunded court?
Right, that's correct. Yeah, I think the crux of really the conversation here is whether or not staff has applied the proper interpretation of the funding methodology subcommittee's intent when they said apply to below the statewide average. Is it really to take all of the funds and address the equity issue? Or, you know, is there some other meaning or intent? And so, yes, it's really focusing in on that maybe that second step of the policy. And this step, I should just add, this step was addressed last year in a different fashion by the legislature. There was $47.8 million directed specifically at the courts that were below the statewide average. That $47.8 million was based on some preliminary estimates that we had made about the size of that funding gap. And even though ultimately some workload model changes changed the end size of the gap, the $47 million still was sufficient to make sure that every court got some portion of it. And it was allocated in the same way that we are doing now by targeting or directing it toward the courts that were farthest away from the statewide average. But it was just the difference that you see now is, again, somewhat due to the size of the courts that are farthest away from the statewide average, as well as the size of the allocation to be distributed.
So with the 47.8, last year we had enough
right.
to give it to everybody below the line. And unfortunately this year, if numbers stay as numbers are, with all the courts that are below the line, we have to make some decisions here about within that, those underfunded courts, where does this money go?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So the recommendation that we're giving in the report is that the committee review and approve the allocation as we've laid out in attachment 2A. I'll take any questions, though, at this point.
So Leah. This is Rebecca. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Rebecca.
So you did answer my original question. Sorry for the confusion at the beginning. I was distracted, and so I got ahead of everybody. But you answered my first questions that I originally had. But my question on this policy issue is, while I understand the thought process behind it, I don't believe that's the language that was approved by the Funding Methodology Subcommittee and ultimately the TICFAC group. Can you confirm that for me, or?
So I cut and pasted and put it in the report at page 15. And so it's the four bulleted points that Judge Conklin read out. This comes directly from the council report that was written about the allocation.
So I guess specifically number two would be applying to this issue.
Yeah, so let me read that again. Just so number two, this is the steps, and it is allocate up to 50% of remaining funding after those first two small steps. That was my insertion. Two courts under the statewide average funding ratio. Allocated funds will bring courts up to but not over the statewide average funding ratio.
My concern would be that it does not specifically address going from the bottom up, and the fact that, and I don't necessarily disagree with that thought process. However, there's 15 courts that would not get a portion of that first 50%, and I don't know that we've been specific enough in the language for me to support that.
This is Kim Turner. I have the same concern that Rebecca is expressing. I mean, I see that the only courts that are on, you know, in the line to get this first 50% funding are the ones that are funded right now at 76.6% of need. So all six of those courts are, and as you said, Leah, they're the ones that are furthest from the statewide average of 81.4%. But that leaves a number of courts that are just, like, we have I'll just pick one out, YOLO is at 76.9% and therefore qualifies for zero additional funding, even though, you know, they're just 0.3% you know, less needy than the six courts that get funded. So I personally have a concern about the number of courts, the 21 courts that remain under the statewide average, and that we are not directing more of the funds to, you know, so maybe that's 50% share going to just the underfunded courts, 50% going to all courts, that we are not directing more of that 50% that's going to all courts to those courts that are more underfunded. That's my concern.
So this is Judge Conklin. I want to be careful here. I'm not speaking as the chair. I'm speaking as a member. I have the same concern in the sense of, I think, a lesson learned from the past is when, without having any recognized and approved exceptions to currently existing policies, we act with all best intent, but not in absolute conformity with that. And while I recognize that those courts that are furthest away from the line are the ones hurting the most, everybody that's under the line is hurting. And I'm wondering if maybe alternatives, and now I'm throwing out different thoughts, if there's a way to either maybe say, and part of this, I think, is going to have to go back to FMS. Now that we've confronted this, now we can deal with it. But without having an existing policy, we work within the policy we have. One, perhaps, to say, is there a way to get everybody under the line to a point that would allow everybody, you know, for instance, Tanya, somebody said 76.6. If we take folks up somewhat closer to that, and then say to the remaining 11 or 15, you get the remaining piece of that pie. Or if we could come up with, for instance, a ratio saying the furthest you are away from the statewide funding average, then proportionally you get a greater portion of those funds. But everybody who's far away from it gets something as alternatives. Yes.
I think it also becomes something of an optics problem for the branch that we have courts that are funded at, like, you know, 93% of need are getting money under this model, where we still have courts that are in the 70%, you know, 70 to 80% range that aren't even qualifying for a minimal amount of the first 50% of the funding. So I realize that the policy that we're working with is the policy that we have, but I think it's kind of inures to our benefit to take a look at the policy discussion about whether or not the appropriate split is 50-50, or maybe, you know, maybe it's simply tweaking it so that 75% of the funding goes to the courts under the statewide average and 25% goes to everybody else that's under 100%. You know, I'm not trying to come up with the answer here, but just saying that I think there's an opportunity here to try not to leave so many people in the cold on that first 50% of the fund when they are so severely underfunded.
I guess my concern, this is Rebecca again, I would acknowledge that Kim's reference to the optics problem, but quite frankly, I think it's a transparency issue with our peers that maybe aren't on this committee or don't have an understanding that this is something that we might be considering today, is changing the language that everybody's bought into. I don't have an issue with changing language, but we need to make sure that we're being open about it and transparent, and not just, kind of introducing a new model in. Because if I recall correctly, even though the 47.8 was done differently, you know, my understanding was that it was with directive, at that point. And so we didn't have a whole lot of decision-making involved in that. And so, if we're going to change the policy, fine. But I think we need to go through that process so that everybody that is affected has a chance to weigh in.
So are there other thoughts about, from a policy perspective, is there maybe an alternative that we could adopt for those, all of the underfunded courts to share, and maybe, again, we sort of weight those courts that are the furthest under the line a little heavier than those courts that are closer to the line, but all of them share within it to some degree to avoid that problem. Again, I'm repeating myself, but where we got, or what happened was the people that said, hey, once again, we're getting nothing, and the policy is we should get something, really caused some difficulty. So, Leah, I don't want to put you on the spot. You came up with those six courts because that appeared to be the most consistent with the 47.8 from last year that was actually designated.
Right. So, yeah, just to orient a little bit on the method, if everybody were to look at the page 17, the column that's on the far right side, that's the after the cluster one courts are brought to 100%, that far right column shows the percent of need at that point in time. And you can see that the courts are, the court that's farthest away from the lowest funded court at this point in time is Sacramento at 70.8%. And the second is Los Angeles at 76.2%. So
I think there's more. The Ventura is at 75, San Joaquin's at 70.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So if we look at the extremes, Sacramento is at 70.8, and the court that is the least underfunded, without trying to be negative, would be El Dorado at 81.1. So that's the court that's closest to the line but still underfunded, right?
Right.
So as a thought, for instance, is there a way to say, okay, you know, if you're this far under the line, depending on, you know, the distance from the statewide average, then maybe you get a proportionally more than other courts that are closer to the line, yet they still get something because they are away from the average.
You just weight it. This is Sherry. It can be weighted. You can determine the distance from the average and weight it and apply it to the 50%.
Yeah.
Okay, Conklin, this is Mike Roddy. Being on FMS and helping to craft this policy, I appreciate the conversation about weighting. at least where the policy currently stands, I don't recall any conversation in FMS about waiting. Now, having introduced the concept, I think it's worthy of a discussion because I can see the issues that are on the table. But I don't recall that we had specifically talked about any kind of a waiting methodology at the point where we developed this policy, which is why the language says what it does. So it seems to me either we take it back somewhat quickly to have that conversation, or, you know, I'm not sure where we go from here.
Well, as a suggestion, and again, timing's everything because we're trying to get this approved to get to the council by July so courts can start planning at the beginning of the fiscal year. But you're right, Mike. This is like everything else. We don't know it's a problem until it develops itself. And here's a welcome problem, but it's a problem. So one thought would be to say, okay, we take the next fiscal year and get back to FMS and say, let's tweak the policy. But in the meantime, is it consistent with the stated policy to do just what we talked about, waiting, not waiting, W-A-I-T, but giving weight to those courts that are furthest away from the statewide average for the purpose of this allocation? It strikes me as that would be consistent with the policy, but then we send it back to FMS to say, can you now, in anticipation of this maybe reoccurring, develop a formal policy? And if that means quickly spinning and pivoting, and I hate to do this to staff, but maybe coming up with a chart that would represent what that weighting would be, and we could get it out for an email or a telephonic vote this week, that might solve the problem. Thoughts?
This is Brian, and I would like to comment on the policy that was developed was pretty simple and straightforward. And I like that we developed policies, and so there's some kind of expectation of following it. It's kind of like you don't want to develop layoff language when you're in a layoff. You want to have these policies set up in place, and we have that. I think we should follow the policy. I do think there's, you know, merit to looking at a weighted system, but for that to happen, and I would be okay with voting for that, but I do think there's merit to sticking with a policy that the committee spent significant time on in developing and explaining, and it's pretty straightforward.
So that policy would say to every court below the line, they get some of the money. Is that what you're saying?
That's how I understood it when we adopted it.
So I think the problem, this is Kim, the problem with the literal interpretation of the policy is we now see that policy in action, and it results in only 6 of 21 courts that are below the statewide average getting additional funding this year under that model. So
That's not how I understand the policy should be working.
Nor I.
Right. If every court under 50% should be receiving a share.
Well, that's what I would hope. Yes, that's what I would have.
That's how I read the policy. That's how I thought when it was explained is how it worked.
So then, I know I'm saying more than I said I would, but then what that would mean quite literally is you take the 20 or 21 courts, you split up 11 million, and it's such a small amount that it really doesn't do much for anybody to get them closer to the statewide average because it spreads so far. But I agree with you. I don't think we should limit it to the bottom 6 because that excludes everybody else. But if we go to the other extreme and say everybody under the line gets a small sliver of the 11 million, then really nobody's average is bumped up, I think, more than a hundredth of a percentile. Whereas if maybe we say, okay, if you're furthest away, as I think Tanya or Kim proposed, you're weighted differently if you're furthest away, but everybody who's within the band does get some money because you're all under it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just concerned, and I agree, if you read this policy literally, I think we all have to agree without interpretation what it says, if you're under the band, you get a piece of the pie. But that sliver would be so small you could barely slice it.
So, Judge, I would just this is Rebecca again, and sorry for inserting again, but
I can appreciate that the sliver might be small. However, if we're really talking policy versus numbers, then we need to decide what the policy is that we want to follow. If we're focusing on numbers, we've completely gone a different direction.
Absolutely. I think we have to make sure this decision is governed by, dare I say, dictated by policy, not numbers.
Right.
Judge Conklin, this is Dan Buckley. Do we have time for a FMS meeting, conference call, and then reconvene with this group?
I don't think so before July, and given when everything has to be posted and available for the council. Now, we would have time, and I really think this has risen up to tick back. I think we would have time within the next 5 to 7 business days to say, okay, well, here's as an example. We're considering two different policies. The first policy is, if in fact you are an underfunded court, everybody shares equally in the $11.4 million pursuant to the formula. And here's what that is. Proposed policy number two, if you're under the statewide average, you get a weighted average distribution within the policy, depending on how far away you are from the statewide average. And here's what those numbers are, even though we're not dictated by numbers. But the policy is strictly, if you're under it, you get whatever that sliver is, you get it. Policy two is, depending on how far under it it is, you get a little bit more than those who are just barely under it.
So, Judge Conklin, this is Sherry Carter. I have always felt that it was important for us to establish policy and not look at numbers. And so if the sentiment is that all of those under the 50% should get a weighted share, why would we not just look at a motion to do that, because it's the policy that people feel comfortable with? That way everyone under the average gets a piece of the 50%. I mean, I don't, you know, the numbers, when we look at scenarios, we start to get lines around our counties. And I think our job is to not do that.
I think you make an excellent point. So are you advocating? Go ahead.
I would make the motion that the intent of the workload formula is to give a piece of the 50% to those under the average funding line. And so my motion would be that we do that.
And that, Sherry, I just want to make sure, but you use the term weighted quite.
Well, because there was discussion around giving more to those people farther from the average. And I think there is a lot of merit to that, and I don't think it necessarily violates what the funding, the workload funding, whatever we call it now, dictates, because there are still differences even to those under the 50%. I mean, 70% of funding is really low. So, anyway,
I get it. Is your motion that whether you're at 70.8% or 81.1%, there is no weighted distribution, everybody, or is it your motion that the share of funding is based upon the distance from the statewide average for those courts under?
I think it should be based on the weighted percentage of where you are under the average. Yes, I do think it should be, because I think that's an improvement. I don't know how else you'd really do it. I guess by your size, but I would be open to whichever way we do it. I just don't want to see scenarios where we start drawing lines around our county and then make decisions on what looks best, you know, for the county. So I think that if everyone under the average funding line is entitled to a piece, that's what we should do.
And Sherry, this is Leah. I think that's actually all that the group needs to say, is that everybody under the line gets a piece of the funding. You don't need to specify how we allocate it, because all of those things will change depending on the size of the allocation, the number of courts that qualify, et cetera. I think
okay, well then.
To just say everybody should get a piece. We know that the
part is the. That's equity. My motion. That's my motion.
All right, Sherry, thank you so much. And I think that's a policy-driven motion. but I'm not going to, and since I'm the chair, I want to step back and wait for a second from somebody else if there is a second.
This is Finke. I'll second that.
And then as we sit here, Leah, so you believe you understand what the motion is, correct?
I do. Yeah.
All
I
right.
Can come up with something based on that relatively quickly for going
Judge
to
Conklin.
Council. Correct?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's up to how you want to handle it. We could circulate something if you wanted to review it prior to approving, or if it's sufficient to just make the motion based on the discussion, and then I'm happy to go either way. Yeah, the question is, I guess, whether or not the group needs to see it before it goes to council.
Right. And I would, this is Brandy, I would say we could move forward today with the motion as it's currently stated and take that information straight to the Judicial Council for July. Time to circulate and possibly reconvene can push us out to the September council meeting.
And again, we can always, we have this if it's approved, the council makes the final decision on the policy. So, but somebody was somebody just trying to add a comment?
Yes, Judge Conklin, this is Judge Thompson. Sherry, would you consider a friendly amendment to make it so that no court shall, out of that, we're staying away from the term weighted distribution, but no court receiving the first allocation would be bumped above the average? In other words, their share won't put them above the average?
I think that's a great addition, and yes, I think it's a great friendly amendment.
Well, what does it say about
policy?
Go ahead, Leah.
I was just going to clarify that the policy as it states now does say in step two that allocated funds will bring courts up to but not over the statewide average funding level. I think we're covered on that flank.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so it's been moved, and I know I'm being technical, but there's been a friendly amendment that Sherry's accepted. Who seconded Sherry's motion?
This is Chad Finke, and I guess I'll do a friendly second or whatever.
Okay,
the right.
Great. Everybody's friendly. Good day. So it's been moved and seconded by, for the consideration by TICPEC as a whole that recommendation is sent to the Judicial Council's July meeting. Now that that's a pending motion, is there any further discussion or question about the pending motion? Hearing none, is there any member on the phone that's opposed to the pending motion or who wishes to abstain? All right, I hear none, so I'm going to deem the pending motion unanimously approved. Thank you all so much. This was a very productive discussion, and actually it's not even 1 o'clock yet. So I think we've done exactly what we've been tasked to do, and I appreciate everybody's thoughtful input on this. There's no other action items on our agenda. There's no information items, unless anybody, you've got Vlatko and John on the phone. I don't mean to put them on the spot, but does anybody have any just general questions for the powers that be, so to speak, or Leah or Brandy? Okay.
Nothing from our end.
Great. Thank you all so much. Appreciate your time. As a reminder, we don't have any other meetings coming up, I believe, before Judicial Council. So we'll keep you all informed and hope for the best in just a short period of time for the budget. Thank you all. I'll deem the meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you and goodbye.